Welcome to Coastal Cafe. I'm Aaron Barnett, your host. Today, Coastal Cafe is a joint production of Washington Sea Grant at the University of Washington's College of the Environment and KPTZ 91.9 FM, Port Townsend. And today's guest is Carlos Clements, the Spills Prevention Preparedness and Response Program Manager at Washington Department of Ecology. Carlos has been with the program since August of 2021. He comes to us after an honorable and esteemed career of the U.S. Air Force, ending his time there as a worldwide crisis response team chief. Hello, Carlos. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Aaron Howe. Thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
Thank you. So I'd like to start. This is kind of an introduction to our audience of you as the director, for one thing. So I'd like to start off with asking you how your role as the response chief in the Air Force and your other roles in the Air Force compare with this job at the Spills Program in Ecology.
Thank you. My history with the Air Force was I was 16 years of Spec Ops, and we were combat search and rescue and infiltration and basically going and doing the work that the government wanted us to do. My last 4 years was the Department of Defense's Department Crisis Response Team Chief. Mm-hmm. And basically what that is just I take a 40-person team with several hundred million dollars of equipment, and we go anywhere in the world, land, and either land at an airfield, build an airfield, and set up a warehouse, and we would bring airplanes in and set up and just distribute goods and items. What I see the comparison on a great deal is that Spills and Ecology is a 24/7 we are go, you know, and failure, just like an Air Force, failure is never an option for us. We see an issue and we go towards it. We find ways to fix things. We are it's just that mentality of service, putting everything aside to get to, we want to go after spill or whatever is there to handle it. I see a lot of the comparisons, the mentality, dedication, the professionalism, the expertise, the coming together of the teams. It doesn't matter who you might be at the time. If somebody, it's never about rank. It's never about position. If you're the expert right now for this need, you're in charge. You take care of you. It's the experts that are doing the work. We're transparent. It's just really, I see a lot of comparison, and it's just the can do go mentality, which is, It's an amazing group of people that I have the privilege of representing, and I'm honored. I couldn't do it without them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see some similarities in the role of providing logistical support and resources to on-site needs, you know.
Yes.
And so here you are. So how have you enjoyed working with the other partners in spill response, like the Coast Guard, NOAA?
The synergy that you have is the capability when we're getting around and we're all brainstorming of how to do something or get something together. It's always, I learned a lot more about the Coast. I've worked with them, but not on this level. And my respect for them has just went beyond above. It's just amazing the things that they're doing with just the number of people that they have and the number of balls they have in the air. So, incredible group of individuals. They just, again, can do attitude, love, just willing to help. I think that's one of the biggest things, that they're all in, and a wonderful group of partners, and a lot of, no, the other groups. And it's for me, it's just, there's just so many groups of individuals working to keep Washington safe and to do the job. And I'm still learning the acronyms and the names of all of them, but the one thing that is consistent with all of them is the professionalism, the can-do attitude, and the drive to really prevent and protect. That it is an honor to serve with them.
Well, that's good to hear. As a former Coast Guardsman myself, you know, now a NOAA employee. So,
oh, respect.
I didn't work much in the oil spill stuff, but I do have a lot of respect for that. It's an amazing group of people. It really is. I'm very proud of my time with them. I was wondering if you could walk us through what happens the minute you get a report of a big spill. Let's talk about, like, say, 50,000 or 100,000 gallons in the middle of Puget Sound. What would happen? And I want to do this for our listeners. Okay. If you could walk us through in a general way the progression, the methodology of what happens and what transpires, who contacts who, until the point where people are on site trying to clean it up?
The moment that a spill happens, say 50,000 or something, and we would get notified, a call would go out, and we would have people en route there. And more likely, it's the Coast Guard's going to be there too. And we would have on-scene commanders. And depending on where it's at, it would decide who would sort of be in charge of it. We would offer up personnel, you know, expertise in talking about it. We set up, at least on the ecology side, we'd set up our command post so we can actually start getting the information flowing and getting correct information. And that's one of the biggest things that you got to be careful with in a situation like this, is you want relevant, precise, and accurate information. So we would have that, and as the information comes in, find out who's more than likely, whoever the responsible individual party is or whatever, they would be there. More than likely, we would be there. We would be talking to them about how, and they would be opening up funds on how, okay, what do we have? Is it sinking? Is it floating? How much is it? Can we contain it? Then we start looking at putting boom around it, basically getting a handle on the base of the situation. If the ship's not sinking or wherever it's coming from, in this scenario, we'll say it's a ship, or wherever the oil it could be. Control the area, secure the area, get the information out to get the resources moving and how to contain it and start cleaning up. Once the area is secure and safe, and we're not worried about an explosion or anything like that, then we start working on, okay, how can we contain it? You know, minimize damage. And if it's a floating type of oil, then we decide, is it floating or sinking? And then we start going through the process of trying to capture and retain it. Then we're letting out basically the information. As we're getting this information, we have a command center, and we're basically letting all our partners know, between the tribes and everything else, where there's a laundry list of individuals, the governor, our contacts up in Washington, D.C., pretty much everybody and their mother knows. And we're giving real-time information as best as we have it right now. Too, because the biggest strength we have is in our transparency. Some folks might want the information to come immediately. Hey, give me. We've learned, and I'm sure as you can watch when you see the news, a lot of times quick doesn't mean correct. And we want to make sure. And it's a changing environment. And those of us who've lived out here in Washington State long enough, you know, if it's on the water, depending on where the oil is at or anything, the winds can change. I mean, things can make things dangerous. If it's at night, it makes it even tougher. So what our biggest concern is safety, make sure we get the information set up, make sure we have our command center set. As we start going through the process, the first couple hours of finding out what's going on and what's happened, then we start, we put together a plan, get it together. We start having our briefings, letting folks know, people get their assignments to do, to basically maintain and handle this situation. As we start working on how we're going to recover the foil, you know, boon it and fix it, repair the ship, move the ship out. And it's from the very beginning all the way through it, we're there. We are there and giving information. And as that's happening, then we start looking at the environmental impact, because, okay, are there any oil on birds or any oil on animals? Is it? And that's when we start looking at, that's when ecology comes into its own, especially spills. We start looking at all that. We have the expertise to go and find out what type of oil it is. Is it sinking, falling? What's it damaging? How, what best way to clean it? We clean it, and then we start talking to our partners in EPA and with the Coast Guard again. How do we, because we contract experts to come in and clean all this stuff and take care of it. And we try to make it better than what it was prior to it happening. And that's cleaning and everything else. So whatever it takes, we are there doing it. Fast forward, once that's all taken care of, then we get back, and this could take anywhere from a couple of days to a couple of weeks, because we don't know, again, depending on the portion of the where this has happened. We would have end up having an after action and finding out, okay, what happened, and then we do a best after action report, to a sense of, not so much as to put fingers on who did what, but just to make sure that we, lessons learned. And that's one thing that spills does on any spill or anything that comes up, hazmat or whatever, we always do an after action or, okay, what do we learn from this? How can we improve? And we do that with our partners. And then there would be a presentation to our partners and everyone else, and even on our website, of this is what happened, this is what we learned, this is how we can do better.
Mm-hmm.
that sort of in a nutshell, that's basically what sort of occurs. But it's a lot of moving parts, and we train for this. We drill over and over with our partners. A lot of them in the industry, in the oil industry, they have wonderful partners and they train. We train. They have a plan. If something up, they have plans. Worst case scenario, plans. We train them. We test it. So when something happens, it's basically reflex.
So based on what you just said, that it's such a dynamic, changing environment, and also you have variables like what kind of material spill, whether it's liquid natural gas or diesel or hydraulic fluid or oil or whatever. So, which leads me to think, what would ecology want to know, or what should somebody think of when they're going to report a spill? So say some boaters listen to this show, they're out on the water and they see a large sheen, a huge sheen. It's obviously a big spill. What should they report when they call the National Emergency Response Center, Department of Ecology? We'll give those numbers at the end of the show.
Thank you. Basically, one of the best things that they can do is we don't want them necessarily to get into it, avoid. But if the folks out there they're our best eyes and ears on it. So I would always say, just what does it look like? How far do you see it? We don't expect you to be an expert, but the more information you can tell us, the more ideas we can, because our response, our folks are moving in that direction. And we're over at the Coast Guard, also they're moving in that direction too. But for spills ecology, our people are moving out there. If you can tell us, hey, do you see it moving in a certain direction? And yeah, when did you notice it? What type of day is it? It's a water choppy. All this information that you can provide is huge, in the sense that I would recommend, again, I'm still relatively new at this. Most people have cell phones now also. Take pictures of it, because as you know, if you can get pictures of it now, for at this time frame, later on, it actually could break up. We might not know where or what it looked like at the time, because as time gets by, it's a huge area we're covering. So we might not be able to get there immediately, but when we show up, it might have dissipated, it might have disappeared. But if you can show, hey, this is the pictures that I've got, what I saw, okay. It helps us in our investigation. It helps us try to get to that zero spills type of thing. Reaching out, we respond to all the calls. We take them all very seriously. Everything down to a cup or anything. I mean, we take all spills as very serious spills, because that mentality allows us to push for and strive for that zero spills mantra that we use.
I was just wondering, Spills program used to have a vessels of convenience program. Do you guys still do that?
We do have it. It's a vessels opportunity. It's still very, it's expanded a bit. You can register to be it was in 2018, Governor Inslee signed an executive order 18-021, directing state agencies to take several immediate actions to benefit southern resident killer whales. One of these actions was to develop a curriculum for use of the whale watching industry as vessels of opportunity. Mm-hmm. One of those, and it's a wonderful opportunity. During an oil spill, vessel operators can be trained to conduct wildlife surveillance and deterrence in an event of an oil spill, and vessels used during response will be compensated by the spiller for the work conducted. You can register to be a VO by visiting www.oilspills101.wa.gov, and there are currently over 600 volunteers registered. It's a very popular program, and we couldn't do the job without them, and it is a wonderful opportunity. And we look forward to more owners joining us, and the more we have, it allows for a bigger fleet, and it allows for our capabilities to react and response. It's a huge, wonderful, wonderful organization.
That's good to hear. And if you're just joining us, this is KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, and I'm Aaron Barnett, today's host of Coastal Cafe, and we're speaking with Carlos Clements, who is the Spills Prevention Preparedness and Response Program Manager at Washington Department of Ecology, and we are talking about all things oil spills in Washington. So in addition to the vessels of opportunity, are there any new programs or developments you'd like to highlight and share with us?
Well, there. Let's see. We have a few things that we're really looking for. We just some of the things on the legislative side, we just E2S HB 1691 financial responsibility. What this bill does requires rulemaking to set levels of financial responsibility for oil handling facilities operating in Washington. It establishes a certificate of financial responsibility, or COFR, program for our state. The certificates issued through the program will be required for covered vessels over 300 gross tons entering our working in Washington waters and for on and offshore oil handling facilities. The certificates will have a two-year term. We'll announce the rulemaking for this later this year, and we expect it to take about 2 years to complete, but it's very exciting. And we expect that there will be a lot of interest from the community that'll be required to get a COFR. The broader public, tribes, and environmental groups, the rulemaking process is designed to help facilities all of the engagement that needs to be done. And this, the program won't become effective until after the rules are adopted. We haven't identified that date yet, but that's some of the things that are going on that we're really excited about. Some of the things that people can do to stay up to date on how things are going with implementation. We have an email listserv on our webpage that anyone can sign up for. And we send notifications out about all kinds of events and opportunities for the public to participate in different areas of work. And like rulemaking is one of the bigger ones because it allows the public to come and voice their concern and be actively part. So one of the things I'd tell your listeners is that one of the biggest and the greatest ways you can help is come to the rulemakings and be a part of it, because the more voices we hear, we take everything and we discuss it. And we're very adamant about listening to everyone and just trying to incorporate your concerns into the rulemaking part. It's very critical to getting a good product out there for folks. That's one of the bigger things that we've had that I'm really excited to share with you. But that's coming up, and we will be sending out notification as the dates get closer.
So where can people find this information again?
A lot of this you can find on the Ecology website under Spills. And if you type in, I believe it's WestServ. We just had this a second to completion identification. Yeah, the certificate is 2 years. I just had that. And oh, here it is. You can always find updated information on what Spills is working on going to www.ecology.wa.gov. And that will actually give you the website has been redone. You can actually go in and it will just type in what you're looking for, or just what I tell folks to do, go play. I mean, it's a wonderful website. You can just punch on a lot of the pictures and it'll give you all the information, but it'll also have our highlight of what we're doing immediately right up front. So it's very easily and accessible.
To report an oil spill, call 1-800-258-5990 and 1-800-424-8807. So this is a question that you and I discussed earlier, which is probably the best way to ask. How does Washington's spill response program compare with other states or, gallons and things like that?
Believe it or not, there's 20 billion gallons that is transported over Washington every year. It's a Herculean amount of, and not only by rail, by pipes, and it's sea. And in that, even with all the amount of oil that is shipped, we have by far the lowest spill rate of any other state in the country. It's unbelievable. And the reason for that is with our partnerships, with the shareholders, and the buy-in of prevention. People understand we live here. People are vested on the well-being of our state. And they understand that any spill is a bad spill, but the nature of it, but there is a fine line and we walk it. But it is hard, but we do it willingly and gladly in order to get to our zero spill. And for the size and the area, our coastline, it's larger than California and Oregon combined. I mean, it's huge. And one of the things I learned early on is that if you were to take San Francisco, California, New York, and all the other areas with shorelines and put them together, you can put them right on what Washington State has. It's just literally right around the corner. The Coast Guard showed me that, and I was floored by it, just the size of the area that we are responsible for. Our ecosystems are unique. Mm-hmm. It's very unique, but it's just when you look at the number and the amount of oil that we do have shipping over everything and the amount of things that are going on, how it's done is because we take very seriously our responsibility and we work closely with our partners.
So you mentioned out of that 20 million gallons, some of it's shipped by rail. Is that the majority of that from the Bakken fields? Is that Bakken oil?
Some. We have some from the Bakken oil. Some of it's from our from up north that comes through. And we have refineries up there in a different area. I do have used to have a wonderful map that I would love to share, but it's on our site. It comes from pretty much all over. My understanding is that up until recently, a lot of it wasn't by rail. But now it's a lot more. It's coming in by rail, not as big of a spike, but a little bit more. And that just makes it just shows that it's coming from all points in Washington and we have to be ready for it. But some of it does come from the Balkans. And like you were saying that area and it's imported and we refine it and we ship it out. And it's a daunting test. But again, our partners, a lot of the refineries, they're right there with us. They're in step with us on making sure things are done equitably and safely. It's they've been doing it for years, and they have a plan. They drill. They work at it. It's good stuff.
I'm curious how, off the top of your head, how would you describe responding to a spill from a rail accident, like say on the shores of the Columbia River or Puget Sound, as opposed to a ship casualty? Yeah. Is there anything different offhand that you can talk
There's
about?
A few different things with the, on land you have accessibility and depending on, cause a lot of, we still have trees and everything. And one of the things that we have, depending on where the rail, if it happened on the rail site, depending on where it's at, accessibility might not be as easy to get to, hopefully if it's just a spill and not an explosion, then we can actually get there and, okay, is it going to hit the water table? Is it going down in any water? If it's just on land, then we can handle it from there. And if it's on the water, then you have the whole thing of, is the ship going to sink? Where is it at? Is it over an estuary? Is it over sensitive sites? Which pretty much a lot of the places around here in Washington, you have the fishing sites. You have a lot of different areas that are, everywhere is vital. Mm-hmm. There's not a non, some are a little bit more than others, but it's a whole nother ball game. So it's just getting to it and managing it. And each one brings its own logistical challenges, but we're prepared for that. We train for that. And our partners are there with us on that. So I want Washington to rest assured that we train for this kind of thing. And this is what our drills are. And there are plans in place and geographic plans all over the place that we prep for this. This is what we work for.
So I want to touch back on reporting. So in addition to reporting the right information, such as current, wind speed, direction, stuff like that, could you comment on the importance of reporting in general for both the commercial and recreational sector?
Thank you. That is reporting is huge because it allows us to get a better view of what we're dealing with. And a lot of the spills, like again, recreational smaller vehicles, we don't necessarily, we don't really have jurisdictional, but that's a big factor. And it will let us know if we can, if we know that on the recreational side, if there's a lot more spills happening there, we can possibly realize that to address that, we can outreach programs of saying, hey, get your, about getting, making sure your boat is maintained, or you're a little bit of drip here, you don't think it's a big deal, but if you take about 20 or 30 of those recreational vehicles on a weekend, and that can be as big a spill as a big, tanker out here, if not worse, because you're spreading it all over the place. All spills are important. Regardless of where it's coming from, they're reporting it is a big factor because it allows us to have real data to justify what we're trying to do. And if we're not, we can't address a problem, which would be the shellfish and the steelheads and the salmon and the trout, the wildlife and everything else. We can't address it to help it if we don't know where the spills are coming from. If we're looking at just the big players, that's missing all the all the other parts, because everybody's involved that needs to be helped.
So if a recreational boater self-reports a small spill, they're really doing everybody a favor, and they're most likely not going to get a fine or not going to get trouble. Call you. This is the impression that you're getting. Just, help us out. We can get resources there. We can do it. If not.
Exactly. And a lot of times it's one of the other, one of the other things that we're very big on is letting folks know that with a car, when you have a boat, a recreational vehicle, there's a responsibility for it. Knowing how to, if this happened, hey, it was an accident. Okay. We have the boom, and we have the materials to sort it out. This is how you do it. This is what you're going to do. We don't want you to hurt yourself and your family. But if you have a spill, if something happens, report it so we can document it. And a lot of times they're like, hey, just go here to get this. This is how you clean it up. This is how you dispose it. That's the kind of thing that because a lot of times if you don't report it, it stays there. It's hurting the environment. And the very thing that you're looking to enjoy, you're hurting, and you're possibly damaging it for the future enjoyment. So, yes,
I'm absolutely also right. Also aware of the fact that if you don't report it and somebody else does, you can get in bigger trouble for that.
Exactly. There's always somebody who sees something.
You can get caught masking it with Joy Soap or Dawn or something.
Yep.
I understand that Captain Joe Hazelwood, who was the captain of the Exxon Valdez, the reason why he did not go to jail is because he reported the spill. He did his job. He did what was required by the law. I think he got fined in civil court. But anyway, so we're going to wrap up here. Is there anything you'd like to add, Carlos, before we go?
First, thank you so much for having us, Aaron. I really appreciate it. And to let the listeners know that we could not do our work without our partners and without them. We at Spills and Ecology, we are humbled by the responsibility and the trust, and we take it very seriously, the trust and concern and desire that folks have for that us to do the right thing. And I wake up every day just glad and grateful for the work that we do and to be able to represent this team.
Oh yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think you guys just do a great job. Because I'm a boater, I grew up out here. My grandfather owned a marina, and I grew up boating. In fact, when I was a kid, I remember motor oil just being thrown over the side, just because people didn't know any better.
Yep, that's true.
Okay, and I'd like to wrap this up and thank you all for joining us. This is Aaron Barnett, and you've been listening to Coastal Cafe, a joint production of Washington Sea Grant at the UW College of the Environment and KPTZ 91.9 FM. Washington Sea Grant helps people and marine life thrive by providing research, technical expertise, and education to support the conservation of our ocean and coastlines. I'd like to thank our program director, Larry Stein, and production engineer, Jared Dufresne, and as always, a special shout out to the band Ku'ich for sharing their music with us at the opening and closing of this program. Thank you for listening, and have a great day.